The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. On our last program, we had introduced the third major animal phylum, depending on how we fuss about phyla. We talked a little bit earlier on an earlier program about whether protozoans were animals or not. I won't go back and rehearse all of that. In any case, they are listed in invertebrate zoology textbooks, which is one reason for considering that they're animals. But we talked about protozoans. We talked about sponges. We talked about jellyfish. And if you ignore protozoa, then the third of the phyla that we want to talk a little bit about are the platyhelminthes, the flatworms, the combining form platy, which is the first part of the name, simply means flat, and helminth is the Greek form for worms. So we're concerned about worms. And we had talked a little bit about the fact that the platyhelminthes are the first phyla, first phylum, singular, that has three germ layers. And we had talked about ectoderm, endoderm, mesoderm, and how, in turn, these germ layers are going to give rise to body tissues, etc. The details of that are not important to our consideration here, and later perhaps we'll talk about them a little bit. But the fact that they have three germ layers rather than just two, as we saw in sponges and in jellyfish, enables the platyhelminthes to have organs. Organs are sometimes defined simply as structures made up of several tissues. But organs, such as excretory organs or circulatory organs or whatever, allow an organism to accomplish a great many things that lack of those organs would prohibit. And it is probably worth at least a footnote here to give some thought to how organs could evolve. How does the third germ layer evolve, for that matter, which is really the foundation of the possibility of having organs? And in previous programs, we've talked a great deal about genes, about nucleic acids, DNA, which is that chemical in the nucleus of cells that contains the genetic material. Ultimately, without taking up a lot of time here on this program, there simply isn't a good answer to that question. We spent a number of programs talking about the mechanical theories of evolution and showed, among other things, that there simply is no phenomenon, sunshine, ultraviolet rays, etc., that could actually effect changes in genetic material to produce new genes. The possibilities for the evolutionist are simply that there is something external, something in the environment, something in nature that stimulates an organism to create new genetic material, which in turn, in this case, would allow a third germ layer. Or there has to be something internal, some kind of an internal ability on the part of the organism simply to begin producing creatively new sections of genetic material that would allow this. Now, for those of you that have some background in biology, and particularly some background in biochemistry, this gets to be very complicated. It is not a simple matter. The consideration of an organism that has the third germ layer, and therefore organs, is very complicated, as opposed to consideration of organisms that really don't have excretory organs or reproductive organs or whatever. From the standpoint of the structure of an organism, this is a tremendous increase in complexity. But how it can happen simply as a matter of evolution is also a tremendous problem. In my opinion, a problem that simply has no natural explanation. Now, it would probably be well to be accurate, to be trustworthy in this regard. How do creationists explain this? How do creationists explain the idea of a whole group of organisms now that have the ability to carry on numbers of processes that other organisms don't? And for a creationist, we would simply say that God chose to create, in this case, flatworms with the ability to produce organs that would function in such a way that they would be capable of doing what God intended that they do in the environment. Now, I realize this is not a happy solution for an evolutionist to swallow, but I'm simply trying to be forthright and indicate what the creationist position is. And as we've discussed before, since we have no scientific information about this, it's not a scientific answer. It is simply one that we would give, which is hopefully consistent with what the Scripture teaches. But for the evolutionist to come up with some kind of phenomenon or some kind of internal desire on the part of the organism and argue that this is really the basis of the very complicated organs that allow digestion, excretion, reproduction, etc., there really isn't a good answer to that. And we'll have occasion, we've talked about this a little bit, have occasion to do that again. We certainly don't fuss over the notion that the organs are there. The fuss is simply how they got there. And while it is true, creationists do not give a scientific explanation of this for reasons we've talked about many times. It seems more reasonable to me than the explanations that are forthcoming on the part of the evolutionist. We'll talk at some point, I think probably not on this program, but we want to talk a little bit about the evolutionist discussion of how flatworms evolved. And now, there are three major groups of flatworms. The Turbellaria being the first group. These are the free-living flatworms. The common example of this would be Planaria. And again, it's not my intention to teach a course in invertebrate zoology here. These are rather interesting little creatures. They're always included in beginning zoology classes, and particularly in invertebrate zoology, which I happen to have taught for a number of years. Among the more interesting of the ability of Planaria is that of regeneration. There have been a tremendous amount of experiments that have been done on Planaria to study and or demonstrate their ability of regeneration. So long as representative cells, a sufficient number of representative cells, and this gets to be a question, I'm not sure anybody really knows how many that would be, but in any case, as long as you leave sufficient amounts of endodermal, ectodermal, mesodermal tissue, the tissues that have been derived from the three germ layers, those collections of cells have the capability of producing a new organism. So you could take a planarian and, using microdissection equipment, cut the planarian up, cut it in half, or fourths, or eighths, or sixteenths, allow these pieces of the planarian simply to rest in a water environment, usually and best in darkness for a period of time, and what you would begin to observe is that each of these then begins to form separate new organisms. So if you cut them in half, you'd have two new planaria, or four, or eight, or whatever. And it's possible, of course, to divide the planarian body in half part of the way through the body. Then you would find, depending on which end you went to, that you would end up with two-headed planarians or two-tailed planarians or whatever. And the subject of regeneration has been a one of great curiosity and therefore a great deal of study. Beyond the fact that we can observe the fact that the process occurs and you end up with new organisms or multi-parts, organism with several parts, we really don't have a good biochemical explanation for it. And as I have observed many times, starting very early in the series of programs, that science simply is not capable of explaining. So the best we can do is simply observe and attempt to describe what we think is happening. The explanation has to be reserved for discussions other than scientific. And so there is a constant opposition between creation and evolution. And my hope for our programs is to help listeners understand that the explanation, the description which creationists can give fits better with what the Bible teaches us about God's creative activity than the evolutionist attempt to provide explanations for all of this. Now, ultimately, that has to be decided in the mind of the individual, but at least I hope these programs will help believers understand that there are sensible reasons for us to accept the idea of creation in detail, the details that we're able to observe in organisms. In this case, the planarian. My invertebrate zoo students are always very intrigued to be able to cut up these organisms and then leave them alone and come back some days later and discover that there are new organisms that are being formed. And other than the fact that this simply, in my mind, indicates the characteristics which God created in the organisms, I don't think there's an answer to it. I certainly am not aware of any kind of an evolutionary answer. The evolutionists would begin to come up with all kinds of noises about what this ability confers to the individual, etc. If one gets eaten, or at least bitten in two, then you got two planaria, or one, the half that's left, that whole organism can grow and produce new organisms and so on. But I would remind you that this whole discussion belongs properly to an area of philosophy rather than an area of science. We can observe the facts of what happens, but then the speculation that begins simply is not properly a part of any scientific discussion and ought to be labeled clearly as a matter of philosophy or religion.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's J-H-E-N-S-O-N at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.